Well, welcome to another edition. We are talking about cryptocurrency, blockchain, and real estate, all three fun and exciting topics. I'm really excited today to have a great guest, Michael Hiles, somebody that I've been working with personally to develop some interesting tech opportunities within the real estate and blockchain space. So without further ado, I'm going to let Michael introduce himself and then we'll jump into the programming.
Hey, thanks, Chip. So I'm Michael Hiles. I'm CEO, founder of a company called 10XTS, 10XTS.com. We're a universal tokenization infrastructure provider for market infrastructure for decentralized capital markets. We provide securities issuers who are raising money for various projects, including real estate, a way to tokenize their securities and their, you know, securities assets to then become compatible with, to list and trade and move around on various licensed exchanges and broker-dealer networks across the decentralized marketplace.
Yes, and Michael is one of the smartest people that I've met in the space. I've talked to a lot of people, both on the tech side and on the business development side and so forth. And one thing about Michael is he is your history of what you've developed and so forth. And I'd like to touch on that a little bit. Talk about what you did early on and then how you got introduced to blockchain and your first sort of foray into the cryptocurrency space. And then, you know, obviously now we know what you've got going on.
Yeah. Back in the 70s, when computers were these big mainframes, my dad worked for one of the earliest software companies in existence, a company in Cincinnati, Ohio, called Cincinnati Computing Systems, CINCOM. And CINCOM's actually recognized as the first independent software vendor in the history of computing. And being literally a kid in elementary school, I had no idea that normal human beings had never even seen a computer outside of maybe a Bugs Bunny cartoon. But, you know, I just thought it was normal. So I grew up surrounded by computing software data, and, you know, it really shaped, you know, the rest of my entire adult life and career. So I've been through, you know, the iteration of multiple technology cycles, even as a young kid in junior high, high school, you know, PCs became the next advent of, you know, technology adoption, and through the various iterations of networking technology and the internet and mobile computing and social media. And then, of course, the natural evolution was that of blockchain and cryptocurrencies. So, you know, I started really tracking, you know, very early on, just from a programming standpoint and cryptography and a coding standpoint. You know, computing used to be an electrical engineering competency. And so, you know, these magical things called state channels and communication channels and protocols are the, you know, really the foundational bases upon which even the internet is built itself. You know, cryptocurrencies are, you know, blockchain is essentially built as a protocol level network, as an evolution of, you know, the data and the information technology. So knowing that it would be the internet all over again, but instead of just for information, but for transactions themselves, you know, I started identifying opportunities around that as it would eventually evolve into enterprise use cases and value propositions to be adopted by business as the technology goes mainstream. And here we are.
Wow. Yeah. And that's crazily impressive how early you were and how deep into it you are. Well, let's talk about some of the things that you're working on right now through 10XTS. I know some of them you're at liberty to share with the general public, and then others, obviously, you keep under the hat. Talk about some of the things that you can share with projects that you're working on. I think they're super cool stuff. Talk about sort of where you are in that life cycle and what's going on right now.
The idea of tokenizing assets and securities is not new. When I certainly didn't invent that concept. There's lots of smart people that realized, you know, early on, the cryptocurrency technology, you know, the underlying technology of blockchain can be applied to traditional use cases that don't involve just cryptocurrencies. How do you then apply that technology in such a way that a digital unit of account token, a, you know, unit of account on a network can indeed represent a real world asset or a security? And, you know, lots of folks got into that space early on and, you know, started creating these public cryptocurrency network based tokens and pointing to them and saying, well, that token there in that particular wallet account represents a share of stock in my company, or it represents, you know, a limited partnership unit. And, you know, there was very early efforts to use this unit of account as, you know, some form of ownership or, you know, value designation. And of course, when we're talking about securities and applying the technology to a traditional, you know, capital markets and finance space, it is regulatory. There is no question about it that the unit of account of a token actually does represent a security, as opposed to a lot of the cryptocurrency conversations where, is it a security? Is it a commodity? Is it, what is it, right? Whose regulatory regime does it fall under? So it's very easy for us to define the world in which we live because everything we do is regulated as a security or as a, you know, financial asset that falls under the scope of some supervisory authority. You know, in recognizing tokenization as an emergent form of, you know, remix, digital transformation, if you will, of the finance and capital markets, we recognize some interesting things very early on. One is, you know, just like in the history of computing, pre-widely adopted technology, you know, there's no standard in place, right? There's, you know, people accomplish the same goal but do it differently. And you see at an institutional level where there's a lot of tokenization and, you know, a lot of institutions are offering, you know, the opportunity to tokenize. And, you know, sure, they might even create an Ethereum based, you know, layer one token for you. But what you'll find very quickly is even though that layer one unit of account token might be very easily portable from wallet A to wallet B, as that token is applied in that particular financial context, all the other data, all of the other information, compliance, governance, risk that goes along with that asset is not as easily portable. There's a lot of reluctance by the institutions to adopt an open standards approach to data. And if you look to what Europe went through with, you know, open banking, they're ahead of us, right? And then even early entrance to open banking in the United States from a financial standpoint, companies like Plaid, for example, that have, you know, different account level interoperability for authentication and payments and e-commerce account access. We saw the opportunity to really create a solution for issuers that want to tokenize their assets and their securities to create a solution that allows them to not be subject to the control of a specific institution's data management, whatever their walled garden policies are around their data, but to actually undertake the digital transformation exercise themselves and then be in a position to go to those institutions ahead of time, well armed with their architecture, with their requirements, to be able to present to that institution how they want to be served as a client of the institution. And the institutions have struggled with recognizing that fact. But in the end, we believe that decentralization comes as a result of the issuer taking control of the sovereign ownership of the data about their entity, their asset, their investors, all of that. That is the promise of decentralization. And being independent of a institution-driven solution is really our focus of being able to put issuers and their investors on the right path as the markets continue to decentralize.
No, it's an interesting perspective that you all are approaching it from, because I struggle with this myself as we sort of look at ways to tackle the technology opportunities and how it interrelates with real estate. And you're essentially reworking it from the inside out, which I like, because what we have found when you start at the financial institutional level, and I'm talking about the banking side of it, the firewalls are aplenty, and then typically the first line of defense, and I'm not casting stones, I'm just repeating conversations that I've had, is they're going to hide behind the veil of regulation and compliance and, oh, we can't do that, we can't do that, we can't do that. So I find it actually, one, refreshing, but two, interesting that you're building a system really focused on the holders of the information that it's important to, the client, and then saying, hey, here you go. We built the networking capabilities for you. You're the client. You need to go to whomever you're going to be working with and say, here's how we would like to move our information around. Here's how we would like to have the custodial, whatever it may look like. And I think that's powerful, because I almost like to say you're like lighting a spark. And then we could bat around a lot of these concepts. If those concepts are held in the wrong hands, let's be honest, they're not going to really percolate much more.
Yeah, there's no reason to decentralize, right? If customers, you know, of banking and financial institutions and capital markets are content with their data continuing to be locked inside of those institutions, there really is no benefit of decentralization. The promise of decentralization, of optionality in markets, optionality and liquidity, right? Transparency, speed of settlement, self-sovereign ownership of your data and your information, and optionality of where you want your asset to go, right? You know, where do you want your asset to trade? What, markets do you want them to trade on? There is a day of reckoning that's coming for banking. They've, for the past decade, have viewed fintech as the enemy, and that's the competition. And we've got to go out and we've got to build a competitive product of our own to offer to customers so that they don't go over there and use that Zelle thingy or, whatever, right? What they've forgotten is that they're not the only people that are able to undergo a digital transformation exercise. Their clients are sophisticated. Institutional enterprise clients, they're exploring technology optimization in their own right. What are the value propositions of their customers? And they stop being responsive from a technology standpoint so that when a sophisticated institutional investor comes to them and says, look, I got $5 billion in assets with your financial institution. I'm now going to tokenize my capital stack, transform how my CFO's office operates. How can you continue to provide me with banking services that I need relative to this digital exercise? And these R&D departments and these CIOs and these institutions have got to adopt a solutions provider-based approach and stop being their own branded version of their own knockoff of Zelle. And that's their fintech and their digital transformation, yeah. Right? Listen, guys, we're past that.
Right, that ship has sailed. Right.
So,
that's what I love is when you get like these treasury folks coming to us from the escrow business, like, we've got this, we can capture, remote capture this and that. And you're just like, you hate to say it, but it's like yawn. That's 15 years old of tech. And now, we did the wallet-to-wallet exchange on a closing a couple weeks ago. And, it was a hybrid. It was definitely not where we want to be as we build out, but it was just cool to see two people sitting at a closing table exchanging Bitcoin in real time. One, it cost 70 cents. Two, it took 8 seconds. And three, it was the most secure transaction we've performed, in terms of not having potential intermediation of the payment phishing or, other nefarious ways. I want to talk a little bit about the real estate world. Talk a little bit about your theories or your thoughts around putting title on chain. I mean, in the world of Michael Hiles, because you understand sort of the tech piece of it and you also understand the real world application.
Yeah. I mean, I spent a good part of my pre-blockchain career in government system support. And, that spanned from state, county, local government, office management, from a data and application standpoint. Significant, it was in public records as well. And at present, there's approximately zero county recorder's office that actually recognize a token on a blockchain as a true and valid form of recordation of a deed or a title. The question becomes, what is the path towards a recognition and an acceptance of what does this kind of a thing take, particularly when you look at the mathematically construct of a non-fungible token, right? Can that token represent a unique digital network-based representation of the real-world thing in the real world? And how do you tie those together? And then how does the government also then recognize that record from a records management standpoint? How do you close the loop? We know it's more efficient, right? We know that the data and the transferability, the token-based representation of an asset, we work with it in the private sector. So we see it in other case study applications. And, when the government recognizes that there are forms of record keeping beyond just the court system, that's a system of truth, right? Because the information that's contained in these files, some elected official, some constitutional agent is standing there with the authority to say, this is the official signature, or this is the official seal of record that says that this information, this record is true and valid. I think it's interesting because, I don't want to necessarily time date this particular podcast, but of course, we just got a nice executive order from President Biden to examine cryptocurrencies and central bank digital currencies and all of the technology of blockchain and distributed ledgers. And one of the focuses is the environmental impact of the energy of running Bitcoin. And so it kind of sparked a little bit of curiosity in my book. And I wondered, I wonder how much energy the banking industry just uses today in a traditional fashion. Well, lo and behold, one of the big criticisms of Bitcoin is this is massive energy consumer, but it's less than half of the consumption of the banking sector, finance sector on a global basis, on a terawatt hour basis on an, from an annual energy consumption. And if you apply that same thinking to government, even within divisions of government, replication of computing and data that interacts with the same common data. It's just they're storing it separately, they're processing it separately in its own form. And, you know, what is the benefit and the cost savings and the advantages from adopting a digital, you know, encrypted form of system of truth for those records, right? And I would begin to believe that it's out of the gate, billions of dollars of cost savings annually across the whole breadth of national government. And when you have states that are progressive and try to have blockchain working groups and legislative committees to explore the use of the technology, there's just not enough awareness. There's not enough subject matter expertise to be able to split the hair and say, okay, well, this is why we want to go in and why we want to actually establish an initiative to explore a digital transformation exercise as a government agency. You know, I think the private sector plays a role in that from an education standpoint, being able to demonstrate the use of the technology in the entire workflow, except for this part here that says the recorder's office does their thing internally, right? Yeah. But the broader workflow of industry, private sector workflows of the transfer of title and record, we can help fill in the blanks and provide best practices. But it is going to take, you know, progressive jurisdictions to lean in. I know Cook County, Illinois, very progressive. They've got a couple of key individuals there that are very knowledgeable about recordation, and, you know, they're very progressive, but they're just one county, right? They're just a big county, you know, without question. It's a massive county, but at the same time, it's just literally one little drop of water in the broad ocean. So, and government technology adoption and life cycle is not a fast thing. They're lagging in the market adoption. If I had the magic answer, I'd be Jeff Bezos, I guess.
you're on to it, man. I know. Well, no, that's helpful just to frame the conversation, because a lot of times when you're having these conversations, you know, it's immediate, like real estate should be on the blockchain immediately and it would eliminate this and it would create efficiencies there. And you know, my response typically is yes, but there are elements that we have to work through. It's a process, as you just laid out. And then the ultimate is, you know, go back to crawl, walk, run is where I am. And I think I do believe this is I've sort of, you know, my position early on was very escrow focused and very payment focused. And how do we use blockchain and how do we use that as a payment rail system enhancement, and also creating this digital currency rail system so that exchange of funds more secure, faster, cheaper. And that's just one element. That's the escrow piece of it. The other piece of it obviously is on the title side and the tokenization, you know, this fractional ownership developments and commercial is real estate's where it's where we're starting to see some use case and actually projects being developed. And I think that's a good first step for people to understand. You know, to me, there's obviously the security piece of it and the ability for, you know, to go and it's immutable and you eliminate some of these fraud elements and you also get a more efficient system of indexing. I mean, those are all enhancements. The other enhancement that there's less talk about in our space, but I think from a real world practicality space, is the price discovery opportunities and the value enhancement that comes out of that and the efficiency and the ability to move this asset, this token around without as much friction and as much legalese and some of these other underpinnings that really make it hard for people to come in and out of real estate. You know, that's exciting for someone like myself is, you know, how do we open the playing field to more people so that, you know, you're not having to go form an LLC and, you know, get four of your friends together to go buy into a duplex or a fourplex.
Sure. Yeah. The low-hanging fruit right now is to tokenize the capital stack, right? I mean, you know, make it the security, you know, the right and rem ownership, the title and the deed, you know, is held by the special purpose vehicle entity. And you run your 506, you know, whatever offering to capitalize the equity of that, you know, particular project. Now, that being said, it is getting a lot of traction, and you're finding, you know, a lot of the small to medium ticket investors, you know, I would call it the, you know, the REIA folks, the Real Estate Investors Association. They recognize that, you know, they have to cooperate with each other to, you know, really syndicate and, you know, go head to head in, you know, project bidding against, you know, even the medium to small tier institutional side, right? So syndication becomes a name of the game right out of the gate. You know, of course, you have the perennial issue of illiquidity of real estate as an asset. And of course, yep, tokenization now provides a vehicle for secondary market trading and, you know, listing and trading of that security on, you know, regulatory rails. And that's been the real focus of our efforts is really around that capitalization stack. That being said, it completely leaves the other side of the equation off the table, the title, right?
Yeah.
Insurance, you know, all of the other rest of the puzzle that goes along with real estate, you know, just tokenizing the cap stack is one aspect, but then you've got the tokenization of all of these other components and these other layers that are certainly on the table. It's just that a bunch of us have been hard at work in the finance and the capital space ahead of the rest of the downstream. And, you know, that's just where you see the maturation of the market in the security side first. I think it'll get there, you know.
It just, well, and I would suggest that as this develops and as you get more adoption on the cap stack side, you're bringing more people into the space and understanding it and being comfortable. I sometimes when I'm talking to peers especially in the title space, talking to legal people and so forth, I'm almost afraid to say cryptocurrency because the walls go up. They're oh my gosh, you know, blah blah. So I typically say blockchain and digital, you know, digital currency to sort of keep everybody at ease. My perspective is that as these projects pick up and as you get more folks involved and as these financial institutions on the traditional banking side come kicking and screaming to the party, you're going to see it evolve. And then that's going to open or at least give people in like MySpace a better runway to jump in. You know, the problem is right now is we would love to be the thought leaders in this space, and we're trying to position ourselves in that spot. But we also have to be disciplined in what we can push right now. We don't necessarily want to go all in on a strategy that is not quite ready to go. So that leads me to I've got two final takeaways for you before we let you go. The first is sort of, if your crystal ball, where do you see things the next 12 months? Can you talk about your work in potentially with another country maybe or something?
From a market infrastructure standpoint, we've got multiple national, you know, sovereign countries that are leaning in because they see the digital transformation of their own capital markets as sovereign nations, you know, as an opportunity to jump ahead in the marketplace. So, you know, we've been invited to El Salvador to meet with the government of El Salvador and the ministries there. We've got conversations going in, you know, across LATAM. You know, all of Latin America market is really, you know, leaning into tokenization, real estate, you know, capital, as well as Pacific Rim. You know, blockchain's obviously had a great foothold in Singapore and, you know, a lot of the Pacific Rim. You know, the United States is absolutely a laggard in yep, the scope of the rest of the world when it comes to, you know, the adoption of these technologies, even from a regulatory standpoint. That being said, you know, when you have bellwether moments like the announcement that the largest custodial bank in existence, State Street, with $4.1 trillion in assets under custody, are now going to start working to custody, you know, at least cryptocurrency and digital assets. So I would argue that we're post distaste for crypto at this point.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
if you're talking to somebody and they're recoiling in sheer horror because of blockchain and crypto,
it's sort of like,
well, wait a second, time out.
Yeah.
You're obviously not paying attention because we are past that. If, you know, you're still sort of living under that cloak, then you're probably falling behind in your general attitude towards the evolution of the market, and you need to pay attention. Because, you know, it's no longer scary. And if it's not scary for a federal bank to engage in digital asset transactions, then it shouldn't be scary for smaller tier players, right? And individual investors. You may not like cryptocurrencies as an asset class because for whatever reason, you know, it doesn't represent anything. It's just, you know, FOMO, marketing hype, or, you know, volatility, or, you know, whatever. That's fine, right? But to dismiss the entirety of the asset class on the basis that, you know, nobody wants to touch them because of, you know, the regulatory ugly, you know, I think at that point, I'm seeing a tremendous shift and a tremendous lean in by institutions, particularly in market infrastructure, because they know digital asset market infrastructure is absolutely where it's going to go. Whether it stays cryptocurrency and you've, you know, got Butcoin or whatever, you know, somebody's trading around out there.
But
I'm not going to argue in favor or against, you know, any particular project, but it's representative of what is possible and what is to come. And now it's time to start to build out that next iteration, just like the internet, right? You know, when the internet came along, it was very nascent, hobbyist, university projects, you know, very early players. And then, you know, the enterprise, you know, commercial enterprises are like, well, this internet technology is interesting, but we don't want to really connect to the big public internet. That's scary. So we'll create intranets, right? And then we'll get our feet in the water and dip our toe. And then they realize, well, you know, we can just run it on the internet. You know, it's all fine. We have, you know, cybersecurity and protections to wall off our own little space, but it's still, you know, public network. So same thing's happening in blockchain and crypto at this point.
No, and that's what I really enjoy. And we encourage all the people that we're working with on the real estate side or even outside the real estate sphere to take time, do the research. And so that leads me to my last question for you. If I'm newer or newish, and I would suggest that's probably, you know, 80 to 90% of the people out there to blockchain and some of the elements within the cryptocurrency space, where are you having people go to learn more about it and to do it in a, what I like to call a mindful way? Cause I started with podcasts and loved it, but you know, as I kept moving forward, what I did learn and understand is there's elements of lens, you know, somebody who's trying to promote something, they might push it in one direction. So what would you suggest to our listeners?
Well, first of all, divide the investment conversation away from the technology function. And I think that you'll separate a lot of wheat from chaff right there out of the gate. And if you really want to understand blockchain and you're watching videos on YouTube of people pitching, you know, like the merits of the rates of return of a particular coin because it's trade volume and blah, 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 that's probably not your information source. You really want meat and potatoes. And so, you know, understanding the practical use cases of a particular project or go to the engineering fundamentals. And I know that's hard because engineering is hard, right? it's like really to separate that signal to noise ratio. Personally, I find my relevance in my real-time information feed on Twitter. And I think, you know, whether you like Twitter or not from a political standpoint, you know, I have to let people make their own choices. But, you know, at least from a relevance and a real-time and, you know, great way to get a lot of perspectives quickly and assimilate a lot of, you know, a lot of different viewpoints around a particular, you know, news event. There's a lot of great information available. Reddit, a little nerdier for people that just want to get immersed, find great resources of information, follow them, you know, always do your homework, right? I mean, do your own research.
Trust and verify.
That's it. But just separate the investment opportunity away, way, you know, just.
Yeah. That when somebody starts pitching that, I always tell people, I go, then you know it, there's a backbone of agenda behind it. So it might be 100% accurate.
Correct.
But you just have to. You have
their
to have
guys knocking it down.
Yeah, you got to have.
Trading is its own competency. If trading is what you're about, then, you know, go the other direction. Don't even pay attention to the engineering conversation because it'll probably make you a crappy trader. But, you know, because it's all about return and money at that point. You don't worry about the validity of the long tail of a project. You know, I'm just looking for the peaks and valleys in a incremental basis on the trading side. But if you really want to understand the shift of cryptocurrencies at the technology layer into the enterprise, real world adoption, the future use cases at the institutional organizational level, then, you know, it's technology first. In 20 years, blockchain will be no more exciting than email is today, right? You know, it's just baked into the daily nomenclature and our vocabulary.
This has really been great. And you've provided so many great insights and helping us understand what's going on in the blockchain space today. How can people get in touch with you if they want to reach out to you, Michael, and learn more about 10XTS and some of the exciting projects that you all are working on?
Yeah, I mean, we're easy to find. 10XTS, 10XTS.com on the web. I'm easy to find. I'm on Twitter at Michael Hiles, MichaelHiles. I'm on LinkedIn. Follow me on LinkedIn. And always feel free to reach out.
And I would highly recommend Michael is a great follow on both Twitter and LinkedIn. He's got some, he mixes the engineering with the humor, with a little bit of snarkiness, which I enjoy. And it's
my Gen X cynicism.
I want to thank you so much for coming on. Always fun to talk with you and work with you. Your team and your group, you've got a great group you've assembled at 10XTS, and we've really enjoyed working with your entire team and looking forward to more progress. But thanks again, and I'm sure you and I'll be talking soon, and we'll be out. This is it for episode 2, talking real estate, blockchain, and cryptocurrency. Thanks for listening.